the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
This is not another story. This is not another drill. I refuse to be another number now, never staying down.
All right, well, I'm going to lead this show off in a completely different direction. The Pistons beat the Lakers last night, so the apocalypse is real. The world is going to come to an end sooner rather than later, in case you didn't know. This is Armchair Sports Talk. I am your host, Eric Dorsch. Got to get the basketball out of the way real quick there, because we're not even going to remotely touch on it. We've got football, and a little more football, and then to end it, a little sports betting. It's becoming a thing. Jay and I talk pretty much every hour on the hour to try to figure out where we're going to place the last little bit of the money we have in our lives. Speaking of Jay, Justin Marcus, welcome to the show, buddy.
What's poppin', buddy? I got you covered tonight. I got a parlay. I'm gonna lay it up nicely for you off the air, and I'm gonna give it to you.
All right, I like what I'm hearing. It layup, was that maybe like a basketball parlay by chance? Is that what
you guy mean? Who all basketball all day long?
Yeah. That worries me that the guy that just discovered basketball was a thing 6 months ago is betting that hard on basketball. But in our little online betting thing, we are gonna go against the accountant, the number cruncher, the man who makes sure our stats sound as remotely right as possible, even though he's never still corrected Justin that 1 plus 1 equals 4. Statman Russ Ivanek.
I'll say I know the numbers, and I'm going to show you some tricks to understand what they're putting out there. But boys, I'm more parfait than parlay. I like a good dessert more than a bet, I'll tell you that.
Hey, if that good dessert's betting $20 and making $400, I won't ever eat dessert again. I'm fine with the parlay over the parfait on that one. Now, on the other hand, if you lose, it's a little less fun. Flip to me 2 nights ago, screaming at Steve Kerr to put Steph Curry back in because I needed one more three-pointer to hit my parlay perfectly. And, of course, they're up by 20 with a minute and a half to go. Steph Curry's not playing. So it's a thing, guys. It's a thing.
He went from zero to degenerate gambler.
Oh, God.
Like that.
I am surprised. Like, Jay does send me some things, and I'm like, how are you doing this? But then I'm like, I'm going to do it too, though. I want to be like Justin.
Dude, I took Oklahoma over Texas Tech. I think it was Oklahoma plus two. Money.
I took Oklahoma straight over Texas, and Texas was the number five team in the country, so I'm just crazy to be crazy. Well, we'll get to that later on, though. I don't want to give away the secrets of our betting. First up, all things Lions. We've got rumors of Stafford no longer wanting to be, or it's not even a rumor, it's confirmed now. Stafford and the Lions will be parting ways. Some potential trades have come up. We've heard things, San Francisco offering a couple seconds and a couple thirds. Don't think that's enough. We're going to touch on that in a little bit. But firstly, last week we talked Dan Campbell hiring. And now we're starting to see that coaching staff take shape a little bit. We've got our coordinators in place. They hired a quarterbacks coach yesterday. Yesterday. So kind of want to go through and touch on it. And we said early on that if Dan Campbell's going to be the coach, we would like to see someone on this staff who has some head coaching experience to be there with him. Well, they did that. Offensive coordinator Anthony Lynn, former Chargers head coach, played in. You're going to, at the end of the show, I'll point it out, but you're going to notice a little trend here in some of the players we're going to talk about. Coaches, I kind of just gave it away right there. Coaches we're going to talk about. These guys have a little bit in common. Anthony Lynn played in the NFL for about 7 years. I believe won a Super Bowl with the Denver Broncos. Was the head coach with the Chargers last year. He's going to take over the offensive coordinator capacity. Rush, you pointed out something very interesting, though, before the show started, and that is, while these guys have experience in the NFL in one way, not a lot of play calling experience coming out of here.
No, it's really very minimal, if any at all. Obviously, we know Dan Campbell didn't because nobody does but Sean Payton down in New Orleans. But on the defensive side, Dennis Allen, he didn't call plays in New Orleans either. And Anthony Lynn, even as a head coach in L.A., his offensive coordinator called the plays. I think he may have called some plays every now and then because, there was a whole snafu about how bad that OC was at calling plays.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, yeah, he's got head coaching experience, which will help the transition, you'd think, but there's, like, no X's and O's guys on this entire roster. Maybe one develops. Maybe two or more develop out of it. But that's an initial concern for me, is that you don't have anybody who's done it before. And, oh, man, are we sick of seeing some of these play calls. 3rd and 15, draw off the middle. Anybody? We ready?
I love the 3rd and 20 where you run a screen, because that's how you get it done.
Uh-huh.
Looking through at the resume, in 2016 was the interim head coach and offensive coordinator for Buffalo. So that 1 year appears to be the only time that he was a play caller. Obviously, if you're the interim head coach, it means they probably cleaned out the staff right after that. So with Buffalo for 2 years prior as the running backs coach. So a little bit of play calling there, yeah. But, Jay, when you look at it, I understand the need for play calling. I really do. But that head coaching experience is kind of what more has to be drawing them to hiring Anthony Lynn.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get brought in here to do, like, in any position, they're being brought in here to do what we didn't do in the past. Like, I'm actually okay with the lack of play calling, because then you're not going to have someone trying to be the smartest guy in the room. You're going to have a bunch of, like, almost common folk who have some experience in different capacities that are putting it all together, and they're going to probably cohesively put a plan together. Like, and that's the pie in the sky, like, what we're doing works, right? I'm okay with the full commitment to the lack of no play calling. Because, first of all, on defense, we could run the same play. If they do it effectively, I'd be happier than what we just did last year. It's like, you can improve. You can only improve on defense. On offense, is a little more important. I thought we had a good establishment of with Bevel to a degree. But, again, I don't want anyone to try to be the smartest guy in the room. So I'm okay that we're all kind of just common to see what comes out of it.
Okay that we're all kind of common.
Yes, that would be the phrase I used.
Those are the words that came out of
it. I see how you said it. I understand. I'm just taking a minute to soak it in, understand it, and enjoy it. Now, to play devil's advocate here, I agree wholeheartedly that the head coaching experience is absolutely instrumental in having him here. He's, as much as he is going to be the offensive coordinator and he is going to, you know, be in charge of this, he's going to be able to help Campbell with things that he's never really had to lean on. That being said, to touch on that of not being the smartest person in the room, either of you a little fear of it's going to take him a minute to step out of that head coaching mindset after 3+ years as a head coach in the NFL? And understand, when it comes down to it, I'm not the biggest voice in the room anymore. I can't be the biggest voice in the room anymore.
I'll say no, I'm not concerned about that, because yes, we have the one common thread that I won't spoil that you're gonna talk about. But the other common thread that you keep hearing and profiles about these guys is no ego. Just guys that want to come in, do their job, and be a cohesive unit. I mean, there was Dan Campbell came in, I think it was said like 7 times in his opening presser. And Dennis Allen, same thing. Anthony Lynn, I feel it's the exact same way, that he's going to come in and say, hey, let's do this right. Let's do this together. And he's followed a similar path to Dan Campbell. So I think they're going to see eye to eye on a lot of things, more than they might butt heads, even with Lynn being more experienced.
And I have to agree. I think when you think of it, the analogy of that high tides raise all boats, That's what's going to happen here. It has to be a collective regime together. You know, he had 2 successful seasons, Lynn did. And I'm hoping that when he can take that success and literally just focus on half of the team, what could go wrong with that? So it's a group effort.
Mm-hmm.
Like I told you guys, I texted you a picture of, what is it called? What's that movie? Like Stallone and
The Expendables. Yeah,
that's what this coaching staff is. It's a bunch of just washed up, still valuable guys that are going to put it together and kick some ass.
I really don't like that you're using the word washed up and common in your expectations of this coaching staff, Jay. I agree. I think Lynn will assimilate well into this, and I think he understands he's going to be called upon to kind of be, which is why I also kind of find it weird that he's not the assistant head coach. I get what they're doing there, but he's legitimately been a head coach. So to make him the assistant head coach just kind of, it fits that role of, you're not the head coach, but we want you to understand that there are some duties we're going to need you to take on while Campbell gets his feet wet. So interesting to see.
What's really interesting about that, and I'm glad you brought it up, was Anthony Lynn started as an assistant head coach / running back coach. Dan Campbell was an assistant head coach / tight end coach. I think this is them going after a guy following the same path with the same mindset. Former player, assistant head coach, position coach, looking to be a head coach someday. These are all lockstep guys, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. Switching over to the other side of the ball, the defensive coordinator, a position that you honestly, whoever comes in, and Aaron Glenn, I welcome you. I'm excited to see what you can do. You come from that New Orleans franchise with Campbell, so that's great. There's chemistry there. But you have probably the most uphill task of any of these coaches we're going to talk about. This defense is bottom of the barrel. It really doesn't have an identity. And guess what? You're following a guy who, coming into town, was supposed to be a glorified defensive guru, and he couldn't even figure out how to stop anything. So Aaron Glenn's got the most uphill battle. The one thing I will say, Jay, before I let you take over and give your input here, I don't like that he's only been in the league. He's only been coaching in the league for about 7 years. This will be his seventh year coaching. Played in the league from 94 to 08. The one thing I don't like, there is no DC, assistant DC. It is defensive backs coach strictly in his coaching experience in the NFL. So I don't like that we mentioned that play calling. There's not even any deciding how that defense is going to be. You're in charge of one facet.
Well, they're probably also in charge of one player, which would be Okuda, because there's no depth on this defensive side of the ball to begin with. So I get they could have put Bob Ross as a defensive coordinator, and I couldn't care less. Where we are starting from is literally the bottom. So I love that Aaron Glenn has connections to Campbell because they were both in New Orleans together.
Yeah.
Good. Judge of character. I'll book him up for that. We can only go up from where we're at, and it's gonna take the players. We need a GM to draft guys to then have the right people to groom the guys. So that's the longer stretch to get things done on that side of the ball. So I'm okay with it.
Absolutely, and I think that chemistry is going to pay serious dividends down the road because they are going to – Campbell and Glenn, they already have a shorthand. They know each other. They've been in locker rooms together. They've worked together. They know exactly what the other can do and where their shortcomings are. So while Glenn is not probably going to be leaned on with head coaching questions, he is someone who can see and understands where – if Campbell has a shortcoming in something, he can step up and let him know, be like, listen, we need to really focus on this side or this aspect of the game right now. So, like I said, it's a small thing that there's no defensive coordinator or assistant defensive coordinator on the resume. He went straight from a locker room. I took a couple years off, but he went from playing the position to coaching the position, which is a natural step. I would have liked to have seen Russ a little more understanding of the whole defense, maybe not just the position.
Yeah, and that's fair, especially with how bad this defensive line has been. Before I go into that, I think I might have called him Dennis Allen earlier, who's the current New Orleans Saints D coordinator, so sorry about that. That's how I flipped that one around. But Aaron Glenn, good guy, rising star, former All-Pro. What's interesting is the assistants that they brought in with him so far have all been linebackers and DB coaches, right? Mm-hmm. Including Aubrey Pleasant, who's going to be the passing game coordinator. So I'm hoping, and I'm holding out hope here, that we can both solve the defensive line coach being hired and this issue with taking care of the whole offense by making a very strong D-line coach hire. Whether that's a former DC or even a former head coach who's been out of the league for a year or two because, hey, he got fired on the last cycle. I think that could go a long way because I think you're right that that's a concern right now, that he hasn't been in charge of the whole defense yet, and that D-line's going to need a whole lot of help. Bringing in a specialist to combat both, that would give me the warm and fuzzies again.
And I agree with you. As we see this being assembled, I do think this is going to be finding the guys who are going to be very singularly focused on the position. Obviously, you're focused on that position you're coaching regardless, but that is going to be their task first, last, and always. And I think Glenn's going to take a lot of – it's going to take a learning curve no matter what. I think that we can't expect this defense to be that good first year regardless of who it was. You really can't. But I think you're going to see the lumps and all that. But overall, I think it's going to be a great first year for him because he's going to learn, like I said with Campbell, Jay – now what are your shortcomings as a caller? You're not just in charge of the position and getting four guys ready to play. You're the caller now. That whole defense is yours, and it'll be interesting to see what he can do with it.
Rush 50.
Yeah, rush them all. Rush them all. moving on. Now we get into the position coaches a little bit. Like I said, there's a little trend here, and we'll touch on it in a second. But next up is Deuce Staley, who is going to be the running backs coach. But as I mentioned earlier, Russ, with Anthony Lynn, I would have liked to have seen him take this role. Deuce Staley will also now be the assistant head coach. Staley obviously played in the NFL for almost 10 years. Weird, he never actually left Pennsylvania the entire time.
Yeah.
Went from the Philadelphia Eagles to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Been on the coaching staff, or been a coach since 11 with the Philadelphia Eagles in different aspects, taking on the running backs coach job in 13 to 20, and then picking up that assistant head coach in Philadelphia from 18 to 20. Now takes both roles and brings them over here. Staley, great running back in the league, rushed for over 5,000 yards in his career, kind of a utility back along the way. But Russ, as a position that we see potential, and we know that there are pieces there that we think could be great, having a guy who's been in this league for over a decade and really has not left the league since 1997 in any capacity, what does that do for young Swift? And potentially, if they're thinking about reintroducing him to the world, in case you didn't know, Kerryon Johnson still on this football team. So
still exists. No, I think it's incredibly promising for Swift. Every single hire so far on the offensive side has been incredibly promising for Swift. Dan Campbell came in, one of the first comments he made was, I want to use Swift as a slot receiver more. He's got some talent out there, right? And then Deuce Staley, who famously worked with Darren Sproles in a similar role, comes in. Anthony Lynn, who is known for a strong run game both in Buffalo and in L.A., this is sizing up huge. I'm here for the Kerryon comeback tour, but DeAndre Swift has got a chance to be sent into orbit. That guy's got the chance. He's going to be given every chance to be a star.
Yeah. Russ, I want you to touch on this, but I want Justin, I'm going to get Justin go first here and give his impressions. But I want to ask you mentioned I want to use Swift in the passing game and all that, and that's great. That's fine. Am I just overthinking it as a Lions fan, or is there cause for reason to say not as big a fan of that because I feel like we're just setting him up to be the next Theo Riddick in Detroit?
So I don't think he was saying exclusively as a slot receiver, more that he just gets spread out. Think like Christian McCaffrey.
Would love that, but I just feel like Theo Riddick technically was a running back, and every so often they'd put him back there. But 9 times out of 10, even when they put him in the backfield, they were swing passing to him, if anything. So.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, it was very clear when Theo Riddick was in the game what they were going to do. And it wasn't run the ball between the tackles.
Yeah, and that's the problem for me, because when I heard Darren Sproles, I got really excited, but then I remembered Theo Riddick and that experience. I don't need any Chicago Bears player after the game saying, yeah, we knew what they were doing. Like, you have to take KJ and Swift and turn them both into Darren Sproles. So then when either one of them is lining up with Stafford or on the line, you don't know what they're actually doing, if they're just pass blocking or if it's going to be some pass play to them. I need that dimension of the running game where it's not just run the ball down their throat. It's Darren Sproles. I would love to see that here in Detroit. So I'm excited about Deuce Staley, who I've never heard of, but he's got a cool first name, so he's easily my favorite guy now.
It's Deuce Staley, my friend.
Staley.
There's no N.
Oh, someone spelt that wrong on my page. I'll have to fight.
And but Russ, I was looking
even
at this,
in your handwriting.
Yeah, I was looking at this as you were talking, and you like again. For anyone that doesn't know, when these two are talking, I don't really listen. I just nod along and say mm-hmm fair every so often. But Staley, 2,500 receiving yards in his career in the NFL. So if you want to get Swift into that kind of mindset, not a bad guy to do it with. Someone who understands how to do it. So absolutely. I like that. Now we're going to move on to the my favorite position, and a position we're going to touch on with our current player, quarterback's coach, Mark Brunell. Jay has no idea who this is. How, I don't know, because we've actually spoken about Mark Brunell on this show before. So it clearly shows Justin doesn't listen. For those of you who don't know, just throw a little out there. Mark Brunell, in the league from 93 to 2011, has no coaching experience, so he's coming right in as a Lions quarterbacks coach. 32,000 passing yards in his career, Jay. over a 20-year, almost 20-year NFL career. I see this one, and I'll go first here on this one. I see this one as a great hire because, as we're going to talk about in a little bit, Stafford saying he's ready to move on. He's ready to both sides are ready to part ways equally, and we really don't know if the return on this is going to be strictly picks, if there's a quarterback coming from wherever we trade to coming back to us, so we really have to open it up for that. But either way, I like it because this is a guy who spent 20 years in NFL locker rooms preparing for game day, knows exactly what's expected of him, backed up some great quarterbacks when he wasn't a player. I mean, spent time in Green Bay backing up Brett Favre, was in New Orleans in 08 and 09, so obviously backing up Drew Brees. He has spent time backing up good quarterbacks. So the preparation and all that, I like no matter what, whether it's a rookie quarterback starting week one like Justin Fields or Zach Wilson, or we do get someone like, say, Jay's going to love this, like Jimmy G, because San Francisco is a team that's been mentioned. I just saw a tweet a few minutes ago that the Rams are a very heavy contender for Matt Stafford. Could Jared Goff be coming back in the other way? We don't know. You would think so. You would think there's absolutely.
Do they have any first round picks though? I feel like I traded all of them away.
That's the problem. If we're gonna trade with LA, it's gonna probably be a couple players in picks. But that's the thing, because yeah. LA has been Sean McVay and LA have stated there's a quarterback battle in LA right now. They are, and which kind of worries me that if you're ready to give up on Jared Goff already, I don't know that I really want him, because that means that a guy who was a backup on everywhere else is contending for your starting job. So we'll get into that in a little bit. But, Jay, I like Mark Brunell for that. He's a guy that's been in the league. He understands what it takes at this position. And like Staley and what we're talking about for these position coaches on the defense when we make those full hires, is going to strictly focus on that. They have their offensive coordinator. They have their head coach. His job is every day to make sure those quarterbacks get better and are ready on Sunday, whether it's QB1 or the backup or the third string quarterback. All three of those guys are going to be ready for game time.
I've got no problem with it. Obviously, with the departure of Stafford, it's going to be a clean slate on both sides of that equation, from coach and QB1. So, and we can only go up from here, I'd hope. You know, no, it's not a knock at Stafford as well. Like, he was excellent for us, right? But this is uncharted territory. Even my fandom, I don't know who, what's his name? Mark Brunell is, right? I don't know what I was doing in 2011, but I certainly wasn't watching him on the Jets, okay? So my fandom has started with Stafford. So I don't know anything else. So it's going to be a wild ride, but from what you're saying on Mark, let's do it. Let's lock and load and see what we can do.
Jay, you know what I have to ask, and that's just because we talk about this every year in about a month or in a couple months. You watch Hard Knocks, right?
Yeah, I've probably seen this guy.
Well, he was on Hard Knocks with the Jets when the Jets were in Hard Knocks with Mark Sanchez. He was the backup quarterback for that. And he is talking about, like, because he was saying about how old, like in one of the meeting rooms, he was talking about how he is the old guy. He legitimately has a daughter he's taking to college in a couple weeks. And he's a backup quarterback in the NFL. And Mark Sanchez kind of starts turning. And Brunell says, if you say anything, I will hurt you. Like,
excellent.
That's the funny thing. Jay's going to go on YouTube or wherever he needs to tonight, and he's going to look up Mark Brunell, and 3 seconds in, this is the sound that's going to be heard from whatever room he's in. Oh, okay. It's going to be right there. Russ, Mark Brunell, might as well talk to someone who actually knows who he is. Experienced quarterback in this league. Like I said, we've talked about him many times because we've brought up Jacksonville and what he did there. Obviously, the starter there for almost 8 years, was a really good quarterback for them on a team that was not that great. Took on a backup role throughout, but still saw time and all that. Like I said, though, has to be stated that this guy is here for one reason only. Whoever is under center week one, he is going to get them ready for that that position and that time.
Right. And for his lack of NFL or college coaching experience, he's probably the single most experienced person to never coach in the NFL at getting quarterbacks ready.
Yeah.
Granted, the track record's not great because you're looking at like Byron Leftwich, Jason Campbell, Mark Sanchez. Those are the quarterbacks that he's been behind getting ready every day. But I can tell you their names, and that's probably at least in part because Mark Brunell made sure they were prepared and they didn't absolutely flame out immediately. Jason Campbell actually attributes a lot of his even being able to be a starter to Mark Brunell. So this is a guy who's done it before, and now he doesn't also have to wear the shoulder pads while he does it.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. He's been coaching high school, apparently, for the last, 5 years or so. So he's used to grooming a young quarterback.
Maybe he knows something we don't. Who knows? No, I like it for that, but I like it for that exact reason, too, that at some point in his career, he realized, hey, I can still get paid a couple million dollars a year and back someone up, but I can also help these younger guys coming into the league, and I can give you the wisdom of the fact that I've been there, I've done that. What's funny is Mark Sanchez, Jason Campbell, Byron Leftwich, you put all their experience together, I'm sure they all have numbers to back it up. Leftwich threw for 35,000 yards in this league. That's not something to sleep on in what he did.
And an accomplished coach in his own right.
Yeah.
I'm
sorry, not Leftwich. I meant to say Brunell threw for 35. I don't know what Leftwich.
Oh, no, yeah.
But Leftwich also very accomplished. Leftwich realized there's more to this game than just, being out there on Sunday. You can get other guys ready. I mean, he's the offensive coordinator in Tampa for a Super Bowl this year.
Okay, I guess.
Like to point out the fact that he's also the offensive coordinator for a guy that's like 4 years older than him throwing the passes. So, and we'll get to that in a little bit as well. So I do like this one for that. This is a guy that he's getting into the NFL. He's coming back to the NFL after 9 years or almost 10 years away. But he's coming back to the right spot. He's not taking a ceremonial position. He's coming in and saying, look, I'm a quarterback. I've played this position. I know this position. Let me have this, let me coach up these guys because I know exactly what it's going to take. And like you said, with young quarterback, because it's more than likely going to be a draft pick or a rookie or a free agent signing that's going to take this on. So I like it. It's very interesting, and I'm excited to see what Brunell can do with whoever is under center at the start of this season. Moving on to the last
weird
one.
To say.
Yeah, it's so weird to say because we're not saying it's going to be number 9, and that's the weird. It'd be one thing if it was up in the air, like if we might trade Stafford.
Mediocre movie.
It'd be one thing if it was that. I love Up in the Air, by the way. What is wrong with you? It'd be one thing if this was a question mark that there's still a chance number 9 could be under center next year. But this is definitive. We know it's not going to be Matt Stafford. There are so many other guys it could be, and it just makes it that much more interesting because first time in over a decade that it's not going to be Matt Stafford starting at quarterback. So it's a weird thing. Moving on to the last one, special teams coordinator David Phipp. And this is a guy I wanted to talk about for one thing only. I'm very interested about it. Been in the league as a coach since 2008. Coached in San Francisco, Miami, Philadelphia, and now here in Detroit. I like it for the fact, Russ, that I told you this before the show. There is not a single thing on this guy's NFL coaching resume that is anything but special teams. This is not a guy who they're just putting at a position to see if he can figure it out. He's not an offensive coordinator. I mean, he was in college and all that, but this, in the NFL, strictly a special teams guy.
Right. For as much as we talk about everyone else having to grow into their roles and not having the experience, this is what Dave Phipp does. This is what Dave Phipp has always done, and this is what he will continue to do, and he'll have a wealth of experience. So that's, I'm not worried about that. And the Eagles, good special teams. Right. So, yes, I'm excited for that, and it's nice that we don't have to have that conversation of an unknown. I need to be convinced a little bit that he wasn't hired just because Dan Campbell went, find me the guy who looks like he's always ready to bite someone's kneecaps off. Oh, this guy? Yeah, it's definitely this guy. Those eyes are something else.
He is a scary-looking individual. I will agree with you on that. But, Jay, like I said, it's that nice thing of we already have a head coach that's trying to figure out his way in this. We have offensive coordinator who's been a head coach, so there's going to be leadership in that front. But having a guy who knows nothing but special teams in the NFL takes a little bit off of Campbell of not having to monitor as much. He can say, this is an area you should understand what you're doing and you should be able to do it at a great rate. So that's not something I feel like I have to always be looking over your shoulder to make sure you're doing exactly what you should be.
I mean, it's the adage of less is more. Like, that makes sense that you have someone who knows what they're doing at their job. That's how you get hired. So it makes sense. I obviously have a certain disposition for special teams, but I'm very happy this individual is on our team, and he is ready to coach special teams. We're going to kick the ball, we're going to catch the ball, and then we're going to move on to the meat and potatoes of football game. So I'm excited about this as well. Touch of sarcasm in there.
Just a little
right
bit.
Right there for
just
you. Okay. Touch.
Not too much. Just
not
true. Yeah, just enough that you can feel it on you. it's a weird conversation to be had, but we need to start having it now. We've pretty much been talking about, oh, by the way, in case you didn't pick up on it, everyone we talked about, I believe outside of FIP, played in the NFL at some point. These are all former players. Our head coach, our defensive coordinator, our offensive coordinator, our quarterback's coach, and our running back's coach, all former players in this league. So we are just building guys who actually know what the NFL is like, and I like that. Brunell and Lynn both played in the 90s. Everybody else pretty much just walked off the field a couple years ago. So it really is kind of it's an interesting thing, and it'll be really cool to see what they can do with it. But let's focus on someone who's actually on the field. Matt Stafford, Lions, came to the agreement. And what before we touch on it, guys, I do want to ask you, do you both find it interesting? Because we listened to the press conference. We heard what Holmes and Campbell and Ford and Wood all said. We've come out to find out, Jay, they knew about this before Campbell even took the job. So Campbell took this job knowing full well, once this is over, once I do all the highs, nice to meet you, I'm Dan Campbell, yada, yada, I have to go find a franchise quarterback or find the pieces that are going to help get me a franchise quarterback.
He is the last greatest denominator outside of the Fords that has been around for the past decade. So, if Campbell is willingly to say, yeah, do it, send it, leave it, goodbye, have a nice day, hope I don't see you later, whatever, I'm fine with it. So if that was the premise that he was getting hired under, he clearly accepted it, and he's ready to go. And I'm happy that this is happening. This needs to happen. Like, everyone's like, oh, I wish him the best. I hope he wins it. No, I hope we win. It was a good time. Goodbye. I don't want to talk to you again. So I'm ready for this, and I don't care. Like when Fedorov left, when Drummond left, when Sue left, I don't care. No success for you. Go away. It's our time now. So this is the next chapter, and I wish Stafford everything great off the field, on the field. I hope he never wins. I don't care. I'm ready to move on.
I cannot wait until we do the season preview in many months, and we can replay Justin and go, no, our time is now. We win now, and then he picks him to win 4 games. Can't wait.
Fair. I've just been everywhere. That's very fair.
But Russ, as you look at it, kind of does it show you like how crazy Dan Campbell is to take this job, or does it show you how much confidence Dan Campbell has in what he's doing and what he's going to bring to Detroit, that he's okay knowing week one, whoever's under center will have never been under center for the Detroit Lions before?
Well, it certainly makes the 6-year contract make a little more sense there. Yeah. But, hey, apparently patience is very much a thing, and I'm glad that it was known ahead of time, because while this came out afterwards, that's a sign of the Lions' dysfunction that we're used to. So that's a little promising, at least, that they knew it, they kept it under wraps, and they moved forward with that awareness and alignment. I think it shows Dan Campbell's confidence. That he knows that he can come in, and he's going to have to start over there, but he's going to be given the time to, and we're going to go there. And it's too bad that Stafford can't Stafford to stick around for another rebuild, but I don't know. We'll get through it somehow. Guy was about to turn 33 in a week, so he wasn't exactly a spring chicken anymore.
No. And this, I honestly was ready to move on, but as you mentioned that, this question did come to my head, and it made me think. We have to assume that if Dan Campbell knew, anyone else who interviewed for this job knew. Maybe a reason why Saleh is in New York right now and not in Detroit?
Sam Darnold?
Well, but that's what I'm saying. If for only reason that you at least know, like, Sam Darnold, if you get pieces around him, can potentially play in this league. He's never going to be Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or Drew Brees, but he can play in this league. Whereas at least you know you have, well, the quarterback you have. Taking the Lions job, You don't know. It could be, like I said, it could be Jared Goff. It could be Carson Wentz. It could be Zach Wilson. We don't know what it's going to be. So at least there's a little less air of mystery taking a really bad New York Jets job, but you're still, there's an answer there.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to say that it makes sense what you're pitching here, that as a defensive-minded coach that you want one last question mark on offense. Mm-hmm. Makes a ton of sense. But then you went to the Jets where there's a question mark at damn near everything except for the address.
Jay?
I don't know. I would go to the Jets just for the draft pick alone. Being able to draft where they get to go from again. I mean, just that could be, I mean, RIP, you just said his name. It's escaping me. Quarterback.
Sam Darnold.
Thank you. I'm having a bad name day. You know, it could be the end of Darnold if they want to switch it up and grab another QB. I like where they're drafting from, and if that's why Sala went there and not here, and he knew about Stafford, he gets a new shiny toy to play with instead of, okay, who's going to fill that void that we're going to have in a short couple of weeks?
Yeah, but how much are you going to laugh now if Sam Darnold is the Lions' starting quarterback? Because we trade Stafford for Darnold in the second overall pick.
No, and again, no.
Well,
bring back Dante Culpepper. I'd rather have him and his old ass than Sam Darnold.
Yeah, Stafford kept Culpepper off the field. He's not going to let him back on. I just kind of teased one for you. It's not a credible one. It's just one I made up, but. Facts are facts. We know what's happening here, so we have to get into it. Matt Stafford, not going to be a Lion anymore. What, Russ, is it going to take in return for Matt Stafford, for the services of Matt Stafford anywhere else but Detroit?
I think it starts with a mid-first round pick. Now, I've seen some people throw out, oh, you're going to need multiple firsts or a first and a prospect and a bunch of day two picks. I don't think it's going to get that crazy. And Deshaun Watson, for all of the Texans GM saying they have zero interest in trading him, they got some interest in trading him. That's too toxic of a situation. So that's going to drive the market down a little bit for Stafford. So I'm thinking it's going to take, again, at least that mid-first, and then a couple day two picks. Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw the 2 seconds and two-thirds reported that the 49ers offered. Value-wise, that's worth about one of those first and a third that I was talking about. So it's going to be, if we use that value, it's kind of the benchmark there. Hope that a bidding war starts up. You're talking like a first and maybe two thirds. Mm-hmm. Maybe you get the Thomas Tatar special and you get a first, a second, and a third for trading a guy out there. And that'd be great. But it's one of those things that his salary limits the options, and you got to hope that the Colts overpay, because the Texans aren't going to trade him, aren't going to trade Watson in division, so the Colts have one option, and you can just bend them over the barrel. That's best case. Otherwise, it's a first and a couple thirds, I think.
Okay. Two things, I'm not disagreeing with either things. Two things there. One, a little surprised Jimmy G was not in that trade proposal.
Yeah, because I don't know how the 49ers make that cap work. With both of them on it.
Well, that, or do you think that maybe they think they'll get Stafford at that number and then they can turn around and sell Jimmy G and pretty much recoup 80% of their losses?
I mean, I think you kind of have to go in with that mindset. That's the only reason you would make that move. I don't know how you do it. Because then you have two quarterbacks and everyone looks at you going, no, that's a you problem.
Yeah.
I'm not paying full price.
Exactly. And I agree. Two, before I get to Jay, if you're the Lions, do you have to go into this saying, we have to get Stafford off the books before Deshaun Watson? Because like you said, Deshaun Watson's price is going to dictate Matt Stafford's price.
I wouldn't say you have to, because it's out there. Everyone knows that they're both available. Apparently a third of the league has already asked about Stafford.
Yeah.
And we've got a bidding war there. So, if you go, hey, a third of the league then is looking to upgrade their quarterbacks, that's 10 teams, we're talking about two guys.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't think it has to be pushed one way or the other.
I mean that more, I guess. I probably should have worded it differently. I mean it more for the fact that we've seen what's allegedly being offered for Deshaun Watson, and it's change a franchise for the next 5 years. offer. But let's just say Houston's like, all right, let's get this guy off the books. Let's take what we think's the best. And for argument's sake, Tua Tagovailoa and three first-round picks get Deshaun Watson into Miami, a place that he's been verbal as saying he wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
Does that immediately – I meant that more for – I don't think Stafford's going to demand as anywhere near as much as Deshaun Watson. I really don't.
Right.
But if you don't get Stafford off the books before Deshaun, I feel like that says, okay, this is what Deshaun made. Now we have to think, this is how much lower we consider Stafford, and by equivalent, the seconds and the thirds now become a little less because it's process of valuing it out, more or less.
Right. Yeah, you can no longer use uncertainty to raise the price on Stafford once Watson gets traded, because then you're exactly right. There's a cap, and mm-hmm. everything's going to be in reference to that and in reference to an actual instead of a maybe, which can be inflated or conflated as needed to try and help you out there. The only thing that could swing in the good to the good there is whoever comes in second place in the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes has now they have assets that they in their mind have already parted with, but they still have them. Mm-hmm. And now do they overpay to save face? That's the only thing that could go well if Stafford goes second.
I completely get it. All right, well, we call him the GM of the show because we're contractually obligated to, because if we don't, he won't be on the show. Justin Marcus, what does it take to get Stafford onto another team and the Lions walk away feeling like they got the best out of that deal?
So I've got to see a first. Mm-hmm. And depending on whether it's in the top 10 or the bottom 10 of the draft changes the rest of the equation here. But if it's going to be bottom 10, because I think that's where it's going to be, it's got to be a first-round, late draft pick. It's got to be a player, an established player on defense. And then you start sprinkling in twos and threes. There has to be a human coming back for me. To go back to what you guys were just talking about, I like to think that Watson and Stafford are two trains running parallel, and one doesn't affect the either. I understand Watson might go for more, but when you're taking quarterbacks off of teams and then you're trying to go sell them, you almost have to forget what they have accomplished, because they were in systems with players and head coaches and bullshit, and the Texans are just as a mess as we are, right? You're taking players and you're buying them for their value. I think they're on equal playing field. And I don't think one's going to set the cap for the other, because you're taking them and you're changing the whole face of your franchise. You can't say, well, you came from Detroit, so you're going to change our franchise less. Like, I'd like to think they both set their own caps for each other. I'm really hoping that Stafford might go the way of the Saints. If Breeze walks away from the game and the New Orleans Saints are ready to win now, all they would need is Stafford. Stafford and Hill, that's dangerous as
shit. Yeah, but see, I've mentioned that to people all week, that if you're looking for the best win-now scenario, the Saints are it. But here's what I'm trying to tell you. You want him to come back. The Saints are going to have a probably bottom five first-round pick because they made it into the playoffs.
28th.
Yep. So they're going to have they're four picks away from being at the very bottom of the draft or first round. But also, so you have to relegate yourself to, you need that 28th pick. I don't know that the Saints have enough to give back on that defensive side, because that defense is good, but it's not locked down. We're going to stop you no matter what. I don't know that they have enough to give back where you can say the 28th pick and whatever body comes back is enough. I feel like if you're going to say that, and I don't think they part ways with him, but if you're going to say that, Taysom Hill has to at least be in the conversation.
Or Cam Jordan or Ryan Moore.
You think they're going to part ways with Cam Jordan?
They'd have to.
They are the worst cap space spot of the entire league. New Orleans is tens of millions of dollars over the cap for next year already. So
I just don't might see.
Not be, if, yeah, if there's a big contract on a talented guy, it might not be crazy. But
well, is Breeze's contract up after this year? I don't think it is.
Give me 1 second and I'll find out.
Because I'll vamp here for a minute while Russ does that. Because Breeze has said he's done. He's retired. Mm-hmm. But if he still has years left on his contract, you got to take that into account of whatever he would have made is probably on their cap hit. But if he's retiring, they'll probably work something out. So
at least we're all on the same page that it's a first, potentially a body. You got to sprinkle in more shit, and it's got to be up there. This is highfalutin shit we're talking about here.
Once we have the answer to this question, I do have a scenario I want to propose because I think it fits everybody's criteria, and it goes against Mike Valeni, which you know I'm all about. So, any word on if Breeze is hitting into their cap next year?
So at a fraction. He was 36.1 last year. It would be 5.75 for the next 2 years on their cap. So
okay,
peanuts in comparison.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair. I don't think Cam. Like everybody's like, okay, well, we'll trade you Stafford. We want Alvin Kamara or Michael Thomas. Those aren't equivalent things that are ever going to pan out the same. I don't think Cam Jordan is someone they'd part with. I think they would part with a lot of pieces before they part with a centerpiece. That just doesn't and. While I think Taysom Hill played pretty well in Breeze's absence this year, I think that, because I called it that he was going to be the backup. I don't think that Peyton and that front office saw enough out of him that they're like, yep, you are the guy of the future. They thought he might be. I don't think they saw enough to think that they can build it around him. So I think if you want the Saints to be a viable thing, I think Taysom Hill has to be in the conversation because now all you're doing is paying a guy quarterback money or not top quarterback money, but you're still paying him a decent amount of money to be a gadget guy and use him in a million places. And while that's great, that's money that could go to solid big name players that are going to fill one role you need to fill. So I don't think the Saints are going to get it. I really don't, but I think it's a number one landing spot. My little scenario here, because while driving into work the other day, I was listening to Valeni and he said, if you want this to be a real thing, there can't be like more than two teams in the thing. There can't be a third team because that means you're just not serious. I don't agree with that. I have a little proposal here. I'm going to work it out for all of it. Russ, I can see your face, but I can't tell if you agree with me or disagree with me.
I'm always perplexed at Valeni. That's all.
Yeah, that's fine. So my little situation, and again, this is a reach for the stars. Everything has to fit perfectly for it to happen. And oh, by the way, one of them might not even want to do this because I do believe it's either, I believe, I don't know if Stafford has a no trade clause. I'd have to assume he's waived that by now. But I don't know about Deshaun. Deshaun wants to be traded, so I have to assume he's waived it by now. But my little thing is, here we go. Hear me out. Matt Stafford to the Indianapolis Colts. Deshaun Watson to the Detroit Lions. Lions and Colts split and give picks. So Colts have to give up a couple. Lions have to give up a couple. To the Houston Texans. Texans basically know they're in full rebuild, but they can collect multiple first rounds probably and a few others. Colts get the quarterback they need to potentially keep going in the direction they are. Lions get a younger quarterback in Deshaun Watson, who's in the top, and you add him to the Galladay, Hockenson, which we touched on, kind of thing. It checks all the boxes for everyone. We don't really miss a beat in keeping a quarterback in the league or in that position that's been playing. Colts get a quarterback who's – that's the only thing that's down for the Colts. They're getting a quarterback that has no playoff experience other than a couple losses. So you don't really get that guy that knows how to win at the next level, and Houston collects all these picks to start the rebuild. By the way, interesting point that you guys both pointed out that, Jay, you don't see them as equal. You see them as two trains running parallel. Interesting, though, that I see them as equal because they're both teams and quarterbacks who are coming off – the Patriot way at the exact same time.
So in this dream scenario here, what kind of picks are the Lions giving up to make this happen? I mean, do you start with number 7?
If you're the Lions, I think because you're giving up Stafford, I think you can, you're probably not giving up this year's first. You're probably going to have to give up a couple firsts. You're probably have to give up at least next year's first. If you're the Lions, you're giving up the down the road. You're hoping that you can get the Colts to buy into basically trading you a first-round pick because you want a first-round pick this year for Stafford anyway. We all do. The Colts are probably lower in that, making the playoffs. They've got to be at 20 or lower for a pick. Yep. So you're giving away a 20. You're giving the Houston the 21st overall pick on top of a lot of – and, again, this is just a base thing. Like Jay said, there could have to be other bodies going in this scenario, but it's a three-way trade that if you look at it, it should check off the box for everyone. Houston's going to want picks galore to make this happen. You're getting picks from two different teams where you can work out the numbers. The Colts are getting a quarterback who's played in this league, who's proven that he's a top quarterback in this league. When he can be protected and play. Lions are not really missing a beat here. We're getting another quarterback who's established. We don't have to look for a rookie. We don't have to look for a free agent signing. And we don't really have to compromise and take a guy who's technically an NFL starting quarterback, but that's not saying a lot.
So what's so sexy about this is the Colts are the most obvious destination for one of these quarterbacks looking to get out, and they have $61 million in cap space. So they do not care how much he's getting paid. But you got to figure the one thing in their way is that Houston's not going to give Deshaun Watson to a division rival.
No, that's why it works out perfectly.
Yeah.
It works out perfectly. Deshaun Watson goes to – the only thing is Houston has to decide how okay they are with knowing that Matt Stafford's walking into the division and not into Houston. So, but that's for a whole different thing. But like I said, if you're Houston, you have to know it's not very likely that anything's coming back to you other than – a role player or two, and a boat ton of picks. So you know you're in full rebuild. This is the time to you say, we want this many picks, and they have to be in this number, or we're walking. But if you can get the Colts to line up with you and actually be okay with this, you could potentially do it. It doesn't kill either franchise by saying, one team has to give up 3 years of first-round picks, and you're taking away the team's future. You can compromise it out.
I'm not giving up draft capital. I'm not doing it just to get Deshaun Watson to give up another. Even if it's next year's first round pick, I ain't doing that. Not with a new GM. We have no
but
draft capital.
That's why it works. That's why
build
in,
upon that.
But that's why in theory right now it works. You're talking about a GM who has made his name in this by being successful in the draft later on. He's not like he does good in the first and second round. That's fine. But he also does really good in the third and fourth round. He finds talent, which is what this team's going to have to do. I've said it for the last couple weeks. We aren't going to win the free agency battle against a lot of teams right now. Maybe down the road we will. But for right now, this team is going to be assembled from the draft. It's going to be assembled from that. It's going to be finding this young talent that no one else really noticed, but that fits a perfect specific point for this team and building and working with them and getting them to understand what kind of Lions football we're playing and how their role fits into all that. So while I don't like giving away first round picks, Jay, I don't like that one bit, but at the end of the day, if I have to give up a 2022 first round pick, a 2021 third and fourth round pick, and I have to give up Matt Stafford, and in return, Deshaun Watson is coming here, I'm okay with that. It's not an ideal situation, but Russ and I have both been verbal about it. That I think Deshaun Watson, when he had talent around him, and again, having talent around him is a big thing. Deshaun Watson can be a top five quarterback in this league. He's a very good quarterback. So, and he's again a little younger, and I like it for that. I like it for the fact that we're not giving up a very key position and having to start over in there. We can have Deshaun Watson. So the quarterback position settled, and we really can focus on this draft being a defensive-minded draft. As far as I'm concerned, if you're the Lions, the first offensive player, if you get any quarterback like Deshaun Watson or Jared Goff or Jimmy Garoppolo, not a big fan of the other two, but I understand it. As far as I'm concerned, if any of those guys are on the roster start next year or at the start of next year, this team should not have a single offensive player on its draft list until the fourth or fifth round. This is a defensive draft for this team.
Okay. Just different approaches, that's all. I want it to be Stafford, period. Nothing else. I want nothing else coming out of the door. Like, what we can help Stafford sell his house. We'll buy it for him as long as he goes somewhere and we don't have to give up anything else. But we'll see what they do.
I think Russ is pooping, so we're going to gonna be you and I for a minute. No, but I get that, Jay. I mean, obviously, you don't feel comfortable giving up draft capital. So let's just say that little three-team trade is something that all teams are in on. We just got to find the right number to make it work. What's that number? What do you take away a first-round pick and replace it with to get this done? That Deshaun Watson is in Detroit, Stafford is in Indy, and a and basically a butt ton of picks and probably some role players or younger players are in Houston.
Oh, I don't know. Let me rephrase
that. Is anybody from the 2020 draft for the Lions, are any of them actually in play? Are draft picks, are any of them actually in play to be taken?
No. Stafford, period. That's it. Maybe if Houston would love us to maybe take Bill O'Brien and shove him in Stafford's house, and people can just watch us like torture Bill O'Brien for fun in like non-hurtful ways, maybe something like that. But I've got no interest in giving up anything but Stafford. He has to be the piece that goes out the door, and that's it. Because asking a GM to lose stuff before he even shows up, I think, is just a hard stretch.
Rusty?
Do you want me to react to Justin's?
Whatever you're thinking. Like, this is an open conversation now because clearly we all see similarities in what we need, but I think we're all looking at different ways to achieve it.
Yeah, I think I'm sitting pretty opposite of Justin on this one, though, that first off, I think you would have to physically harm Bill O'Brien for them to be happy with that trade. Man, did he do awful things. But if you want Watson, even if you've given up Stafford, it's going to hurt. You're going to give up some valuable stuff because that's a good quarterback who's younger. And, yeah, you're going to end up having to pay more for him in contract. You're going to have to pay more for him in draft assets, too. And that's the positioning you're seeing the GM from Houston take right now, going, I have zero interest in trading him, which we all know is bullshit. But he's saying it so that you don't think you can get him for pennies on the dollar. So that's his signal that you're going to have to pay full price, and that full price is a lot more than just that. So unless you're willing to part with some first-round picks, you're not going to get Watson otherwise.
Yeah, no, I agree. Can we ask Myra what she thinks? I see her moving around.
Oh, my goodness. She thinks it's dinner time now because she's 15 minutes early. My dog knows time, and it's incredibly annoying, but I love her.
Well, with all the numbers you throw out, I'm surprised that she doesn't also, know how to use this, use Skype and Zoom to tell you when she wants things. I agree, and I just think it's a weird thing because – first instinct is to find a way to make the deal that really doesn't hurt you in that way. The first instinct is to find that deal that ends up having a franchise quarterback still in Detroit, which is probably not going to happen. Like, Jay, I know how much you like Jimmy G. I don't really have a problem with Jimmy G. I just think that he was overhyped, went to San Francisco, and I think we're seeing that he was a good quarterback. He was not the next, he was not the second coming of anything. He was a good quarterback. San Francisco's a decent team. He's had injuries. It's hurt him. I was never sold on Jared Goff. I still am not. I really don't like to see him. I really don't want him in Detroit. The problem is, as I go through all these deals, knowing that Stafford is probably second on the call sheet behind Deshaun Watson, I don't see a lot of places that are going to give us a quarterback in return that we're going to feel comfortable with. Because a lot of those teams are not willing to part. Either they don't need the quarterback, so Stafford's off the table, or it's just not a realistic expectation. I mean, honestly, I'd love to say that, oh, yeah, we're receiving calls that, Dak Prescott, which I'm still waiting for Jerry Jones to decide to screw Dak Prescott and trade for Matt Stafford.
Oh, he's going to get paid. He'll get paid.
Oh, my God.
I'm sure he's going to get paid. I'm just saying, I'm still waiting for that moment that we're going to hear. Jerry Jones has told Dak Prescott he will not be giving them franchise tag and we'll be releasing him after this year and is traded for Matt Stafford. I'm still waiting for that. I don't think it's going to happen, but if it happens, it happens. So part of me is still waiting for that call that we're going to find out something crazy has happened. I just hope that they don't panic. The Lions kind of hold the leverage right now. Cause at the end of the day, they can go to Stafford and be like, look, we tried. There wasn't a deal. We did everything we could. There wasn't a deal, Matt. We can't just give you away for peanuts. And Stafford has to understand that. So at the end of the day, the Lions don't have to stay by to Stafford. They agreed they will, but at the same time, he has to understand no matter what, anything else, this is a business. There's nothing we can do about it. So the Lions hold a lot of leverage here. I just hope that they don't panic at the last minute and say, oh, well, well, I guess we'll take what we can get. That's not the way to look at this right now. It just isn't. It's not like Stafford's on an expiring contract.
But some leverage that teams do have is, I think it's March 10th, Stafford is owed like 10 million bones or something stupid like that. He gets a bonus. So like if we get pushed up to the 11th hour, teams can be like, well, if I wait, they got to bleed some cash. So there is some foul play in March.
But see, I think if the Lions are smart, and I think they've sat and talked to Stafford about this. This wasn't just a decision made on Monday. Like this was something they've probably had talks with him about. If they're smart, they look at Stafford and say, we're going to field everyone that calls. We're going to listen to every single offer, even if it's absolutely absurd. We'll listen to every single offer. If by March 8th we haven't heard anything that fits and we have to pay you, you're not leaving Detroit this year. You're going to spend another year here and we'll re-up after this year. There's no way that they're going to balk in the 11th hour. If they get to the 9th or the 10th and they have to pay Stafford, he's not leaving Detroit for another year. It just doesn't make sense.
To the other side, we have seen trades in the NFL before where they let it get past that deadline, and now the trade compensation is higher because he can fit under your cap at a lesser cost. So it could even be a strategy. I wouldn't rule it out if we get past that date that he won't be traded necessarily. Yeah. I think up until he takes a snap, he could get moved.
It's just very interesting because it makes you reassess. I see Stafford in a higher light, but listening to some of the offers that were going out for Deshaun Watson, it's just insane. Like this is just one that's in my head. The Browns made the playoffs this year. They made the playoffs. Like they had a good year. One of the trades I heard was like the next 3 years of first round picks, Odell Beckham and Baker Mayfield just for Deshaun Watson.
Ooh.
Like that is, if you're the Browns, you're not hurting that bad for a quarterback that you need to, like is Baker the best quarterback in the league? No, but he proved this year he can get you to the playoffs. He can play well enough to be a good offense. And look, I've said this for the last 2 years. I'm going to say it for the next probably 10 years. Baker Mayfield just has to complete a couple passes. Your job is to give the ball to Nick Chubb and let Nick Chubb win you football games. And he does it. He's a pretty good running back. So hearing those values just makes me realize that maybe we overvalue Stafford, but I don't want to see the Lions make the mistake of taking the undervalue just to get him off the books and make both sides happy.
Oh, we definitely overvalue Stafford, having watched him as often as we have. But I'm hoping the bidding war bridges that gap between our perception and reality.
Which I think we'll see it. Yep. I really, really do. I think we will see it. All right, so moving on to the actual football that's still being played. Looking back last week, we had the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Green Bay Packers. This was actually a very, very good game. I will say that Brady did everything he could to help Green Bay win that game.
Yep.
Green Bay just could not get it done. Brady, obviously, I'm trying to get this pulled up right now. Brady finished 20 of 36 for 280, three touchdowns, three interceptions to Aaron Rodgers, 33 completions on 48 attempts, 346, three touchdowns, one interception. Not a lot of running in this game, obviously, by the passing, as you see. Chris Godwin, five catches for 110 yards. Marquez Valdez-Scantling actually was the guy for them on the other side. Four catches, 115 yards, and a touchdown. Devontae Adams, nine catches, 67 yards. So not a factor, but not really as big a factor as I think a lot of people expected. I love this game because I ran the parlay and won $400 on it. But, Jay, when you look at this, obviously, Tom Brady just does not want to seem to stop playing football. For now, the second person ever to play in a Super Bowl for the AFC and the NFC. If he wins it, he'll be the first one to ever win in playing for both conferences. But when you look at this Tampa team, like we kind of joked early on that they were going to, Tom Brady's on the team, they're going to make the Super Bowl. And then for a while there, it didn't look like that was really going to happen. But this team, if you got to go up against Kansas City, this looks like a team who has enough offensive firepower in reality to at least compete with them. I'm not saying beat them, but they at least seem to have the offensive firepower to be able to compete with the Kansas City Chiefs.
When we get to our Super Bowl predictions, I am not only going to say they are competing, but they are beating. FFTB, fucking Tom Brady. Who else is going to throw three picks in the second half to Aaron Rodgers in a playoff game and still win? FTB, that's who. for whatever reason, this guy has a deal with every deity on the planet, and it's Tom Brady, man. He had to go to Michigan. He has to haunt everything that I do. It's Tom Brady. I don't know how, A, Rodgers didn't run the ball in, and B, LaFleur made the coaching decisions that he made.
Oh, no,
and Tom Brady's in the Super Bowl. Yeah. And they have a good team. That's the problem. I can hate Tom Brady as the person, but as the player, he is surrounded by guys that when you name five of the elite players on his team, there's usually three of them with a touchdown every game. And Green Bay didn't take advantage of him, and the Bucks are in. The Bucks are in the Super Bowl. I keep writing down the Pats. I have a terrible habit.
Weird.
I keep
That's
putting Pats. I'm like, no, Bucks. Bucks are in the Super Bowl. It's FTB, baby.
Well, and Russ, I obviously want you to touch on this, but let's talk about that. Like, you're LaFleur. That, to me, seemed like a panic moment. He just, like, it was go for the points. And it's like, no, you put the ball in Aaron Rodgers' hands, and you let Aaron Rodgers get you the points. This is, like, you're in a game where you can't afford the loss. You lose, you go home, and you already drafted a quarterback in the first round of last year, so you're saying to Rodgers, win or we might have to reevaluate, which is stupid. But LaFleur, it just seemed like a panic moment to me.
Yeah, it was a blunder, and it wasn't his only of the game. There was a fourth down earlier in the game that I have no idea why they didn't go for it. And then to take the points at the end there, you're down eight, and you're going to give Tom Brady back the ball with a chance to just completely ice you out of the game? No, dude. Go for the touchdown. It's Aaron Rodgers. It's frustrating. You bring up that they drafted Rodgers' heir apparent. If they draft anybody else, are they enough to make the contribution to swing that game the other way? And are we talking about the Packers going in if they go anywhere else? And if that's the case, to really get it chaotic here, how good does Love have to be to make up for the fact that you just pissed away a chance at the Super Bowl to take him? Right? Does he have to be Aaron Rodgers again? That's a lot.
You got to win, too.
Yeah. But basically, if you want to talk about one in the hand versus two in the bush here, that's a rough look as an organization and it's a rough look as a head coach to not go for it.
Well, I'll put this in perspective because you asked, how good does, like, if they take anyone but Love, is that enough? Mm-hmm. In the next, let's see, they took Love with the 26th overall pick. So I'm going to go to the 41st pick just to make it easy and prove my point. 32nd overall pick. So six picks later, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's playing football right now. Ted Higgins, wide receiver. Michael Pittman, wide receiver out of USC. DeAndre Swift, running back out of Georgia. And then to just go a little bit further, just to put the final thing on there, Jonathan Taylor was a pretty good player for the Colts this year at running back, and Justin still can't understand why he didn't win a Heisman. And Laviska Shenault, playing wide receiver for Jacksonville. So all these offensive weapons that, yes, could have, and I think the running back especially, could have made that little bit of difference to be that extra person. Plenty of defensive players on the other side, too, that you could have gone with. So it is a very interesting question. I agree with you on that. It's just, it's weird to think about if they don't go with Love. And then, of course, we all saw Rodgers' press conference afterwards kind of being as cryptic as can be. I get you just lost it, but I almost would have rather Rodgers just came in and said, yeah, I don't want to be here anymore. Like, really, really just shake shit up. Let just be, I don't want to be here anymore.
I don't. That would have tanked Stafford's market even worse.
I don't know, though. Like, hey, we'll give you Stafford and you can trade him away and we'll take Rodgers. Come here. Come on. I get it. It's a weird conversation. Over to the other side, Kansas City Chiefs take on the Buffalo Bills, 38-24 for Kansas City. Look, I had Buffalo in this. I thought the new K-Gun was going to be ready to go, ready to roll. Josh Allen, 28 of 48, 267, two touchdowns, one interception. Patrick Mahomes, 29 of 38, 29 of 38. This guy is just so perfect. Three touchdowns, 325 yards passing. Again, another one, not a lot of running. I find it kind of a blaring thing if you're the Buffalo Bills that Josh Allen was your leading rusher. Might want to look into that. Tariq Hill and Travis Kelce, both over 100 yards for Kansas City. Cole Beasley, 7 catches, 88 yards for Buffalo, along with Stephon Diggs, 6 catches for 77 yards. Russ, Kansas City team, wasn't really a surprise. They're the defending champs. They're the defending champs until someone unseats them. They have to be the favorites. But when you look at this Buffalo team, I look at it as this was your first taste of it. You're not going anywhere. You've got to take the next step forward. Allen, Diggs, all these guys should still be here, and you can build on it. So this is definitely a Buffalo team to be weary of, but at the end of the day, this is still a Kansas City team you have to unthrone, and that's a team that doesn't look like it's going to be taken apart anytime soon.
No, it doesn't. And after the first quarter, I thought our Bills pick looked really smart.
Mm-hmm.
It's 9-0, and I'm going, hey, Kansas City, 3 games, haven't scored over 22 points. Here we go, 0 points after one. And then they scored 21 in the second quarter alone, and they just did Kansas City things the rest of the game. And Tyreek Hill was a monster, and he continues to be a cheat code. I just know that you're going to have Mahomes for a while. You're going to have Hill for a while. You're going to have Kelce for a while. And if they even figure out a way to be consistent on the ground, this offense is going to keep you in any game, no matter what your defense does. And it's, yeah, I think you're exactly right. We're going to be talking about them at this time of year for the next 5 years, 6 years minimum.
Yeah, we get why they did it. I 100% get why they did it. I still don't think he should be in the league, but he is.
Yeah.
Imagine this team if Kareem Hunt's still on it.
Yep.
Exactly the thing. Jay, your impressions of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Look, I was also on the Bills bandwagon. I also had Bills field goal as the first scoring play of the game, which that paid out pretty nicely for me. But my analysis last week was elite versus good. This is elite versus good. Kelce and Hill made up for 89% of the total yards on offense. Just those two guys. And guess who's giving the ball to them? Mahomes. That is elite versus good by definition. I love your take, Eric, on Josh Allen. He'll be back. They got that management. Your team, you're not built yet. You're not done. You are not Kansas City yet. That was elite versus good. So maybe they'll kill Brady in the Super Bowl.
We'll see. All right, well, next week we're going to, like, next week's Super Bowl week, we're going to really touch on everything we're going to get into. But real quick, I want to ask you both before we get to online betting to wrap up the show. Quick prediction, Kansas City or Tampa Bay, Russ?
I'm going to waffle on this so many damn times in the next 2 weeks. I absolutely hate this pick. We talk about Tom Brady, right, as why Tampa Bay's there. But the reason Tampa Bay's in the Super Bowl is because of that defense. Is it enough to beat Mahomes? Well, I thought the Bills were going to be, and they absolutely didn't. So I can't get fooled twice in a row here. I'll go with Kansas City just with that overwhelming offense, and I'm not going to sleep well on it. I promise you that.
Okay. Jay?
And I know you're not going to sleep well because defense is going to win this championship. The Bucs have the third most. This is my favorite new stat. I didn't know this existed. This is the real thing, and I love this. They have the third most quarterback knockdowns, QBKDs, love it. The second best on pressures, but they do get penalized a shit ton, sixth most in the league. If they can play smart defense and they get those QBKDs, which that's just an awesome thing to say really quickly, they're going to win. I've got the Bucs winning 31-28.
All right. Yeah, I'm looking. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Until he's not playing anymore, you can't really count Tom Brady out of a Super Bowl. I get he's lost a couple. But you just can't count him out of it. He's got six rings for a reason. I love that this is a game of almost the era is passing along. You have the guy that did it for so long and the guy we're assuming is probably going to do it for a while. I love it, but I just think for right now, the experience wins out. I'm taking Tampa Bay. Again, I'm with Russ. I'll probably waffle on this 12 times between then and now, but for right now, I'm taking Tom Brady.
So I've got a secret weapon for Kansas City that they need to do. Just sign Eli Manning to a one-day contract and have him just sit on the other sideline and just go, hey, Tom, it's the Super Bowl. Weird that we're here again, huh?
It's a special Ring of Honor night, which they're going to honor someone that never played for the team.
Absolutely. All right, so moving on to wrap it up. Last week, online betting became legal. Everybody across the board really jumped on it. It's been a big thing. One guy who, as far as we know, he could really just be doing it and not telling us. One guy who didn't seem to really jump on the bandwagon as much is Russ. Guys, which, Russ, this seems like something you'd be phenomenal at. The stats, the analytics, you know the safe bets to play looking into it. So we thought, hey, let's have some fun. I'm going to show you, and every one of these I have legitimately looked at and considered betting on. Okay? Jay, you can do it as you want to. It's however you want. I put mine to a set. Every one of these bets, Russ, I'm betting $25.
Okay.
So just to give you the, so you can figure out the number. I'm going to lead it off because I texted him the last couple days. We know him as Jillian's boy toy, Mike, Jillian's boyfriend. Nice guy. Really cool. Probably won't ever speak to me again because I told him I'm a Duke Blue Devils fan. Russ and Justin But they've figured out a way to live with it. Mike, you can too. Mike's pick to lead it off. We're going to let him have first tab. San Francisco 49ers, 2021-2022 NFC champions, plus 700, and Super Bowl winners, plus 1500.
All right, that was 700.
To be the NFC champs, to win the Super Bowl is plus 1500.
Oh, okay. So, to give you a bit of a look into the method of my madness here. So with those money lines, there's an implied probability, and it's basically calculated by taking your stake and dividing it by your total payout. So on $700, right, we know you have to bet $100 to win $700. So your stake's $100 over a total payout of $100 plus $700, $800, right? That's your total payout. That's a 12.5% chance that they're going to win. That's a trap. When you talk about safe bets, this is the opposite of it, because what this is doing is it's a small probability that's just high enough that you go, oh shit, there's only four teams in the division. They could sneak in. Something could happen. But here's the thing. Tell me who's their quarterback. Maybe it's Jimmy Garoppolo. We don't know. If it's Stafford, I feel a whole lot better about that, but not much. They just lost their D coordinator. They're bringing in new guys left and right. They lost one of their key offensive assistants there. Yeah, plus 700, 12.5% implied odds, plus 1,500, implied 6.3% odds. I'm not even sure that they'd be the favorites in their own division if things go well this offseason. So I think that's a trap bet. Go buy yourself a parfait.
All right, so Russ says parfait, not going with the parlay. Got it.
Wait, are those parlay odds or those individual bets? Because if you're going to commit to San Fran, okay. So what? I have a problem with this. Yes, newly founded gambling addict me has a problem. If you're going to commit, you parlay that shit. You boost your odds and you parlay. If you're going to commit that hard to San Francisco, you don't separate those bets. Make some money, buddy.
All right, Mike, take the parlay. You got to make it a parlay, okay? I'll get your reaction over the week, and we'll next week when we talk about this, we'll have Mike's reaction to this. But, Mike, you got to take the parlay on that one, buddy. Can't separate them. Not splitting the aces, my friend. You got to take the parlay. Jay, throw one of your bets out there for us.
Rookie mistake. God. Just hurts. Okay, I'm going to go with a good one here. Tom Brady, higher passer rating over Mahomes. I was a little more Super Bowl focused.
Ooh.
Not bad odds, plus 133. So Tom Brady, a higher passer rating over Mahomes.
So 133, implied odds are 42.9%. So almost an even chance is what they're saying there. I should mention, implied odds aren't necessarily predicted odds. In fact, they're necessarily different. Because do you have the line on what the opposite would be? Is Mahomes with the better passer rating?
I'm logged into my app. You give me a hot minute and bloviate about something, I'll get it for you.
Okay. So basically what I'm trying to do here is show you that we have an implied odds with that, and it's 42.9%. I'm going to guess roughly we're going to end up with a implied probability of Mahomes being better around, what would that be? 50. It's probably going to be around 60%. And you'll notice 60 plus 42.9, greater than 100%. That's because that's how the house always wins. Because these odds are never going to actually be as good as the predicted odds are. It's usually like a 3 to 5% over round that they have going.
So we shouldn't assume that it's really going to be 50. We shouldn't assume it's going to be 57.1 is what you're saying. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, whatever.
It's actually even.
Even so,
I take that back. No, sorry, Mahomes is negative 167.
Okay, yep, and it's a 62.5% odds there, which totals up to 105.5. So they've got a 5.5% over round there, which is relatively big, which shows some uncertainty on behalf of the on the house. If the over round is smaller, right, they're more certain what's going to happen, and they know that they can control to get enough bets on either side. This one, with such a big spread, means they're not really sure, and they're protecting themselves on it, which means to me, you got a shot here. This might actually be worth looking at, because that's that much uncertainty, and you're going against, we just talked about, a defense who excels in pressuring the quarterback. All it takes is a couple of interceptions and Tom Brady to not throw three interceptions in back-to-back games. Have a real shot at this passer rating being higher for Tom Brady in what's probably much closer to 50% than these implied odds would suggest.
So, parlay or parfait?
I'm going to parlay.
There we go.
Okay. I press the button. Here it goes. Here it goes. There goes $5 off into the universe.
All right.
Tom Brady, higher passer rating.
I have, because we're running short on time, I have two I want to get to. So, Jay, I'll let you throw out a couple in there, but I want to stick with the Super Bowl. We're going to stick with Mahomes and Brady. Anyone other than Mahomes or Brady for Super Bowl MVP, the minimum is plus 1,200, Russ. So
I believe
it's like Tyreek Hill is the next person. It's minimum 1,200.
So I think this is another trap one. So up front, I'll say parfait.
Okay.
Go buy yourself a dessert and spend the money on that instead. Because it's a quarterback's league. And it's going to take something pretty remarkable for either one of them not to get it. And you know damn well Tampa Bay wins. It's going to Tom Brady no matter what.
Yeah.
Just on his name alone. And Kansas City, Mahomes still stirs the drink there. And who else could it be? It would take a uniquely tremendous effort from whoever it is. And you can't tell me who that's going to be. So that's why these trap ones, that the odds are high enough that you go, hey, he's the next best chance. But realistically, it's more like a 3% chance across the board. So you're paying for more odds than you're actually realistically looking at. That's a trap. Parfait.
Parfait. All right, Jay.
Most rushing yards, Le'Veon Bell plus 1,600.
the guy who's only played two games.
I hope you're not full. You might have some more parfait in your day.
Yeah,
plus 1,600.
The implied odds is 5.9% with that. However, I don't even have to look at that to know that for whom the bell tolls is not him. how many rushing yards did he have in the last game? I believe it was zero.
Zero.
No, so many weird things would have to happen. You might as well bet on you getting struck by lightning when you walk out of your house.
Fair enough. All right, we're going to go over to the sport Russ knows most about, golf. this is one I was very interested in. This is a long shot, Russ. Believe me, I know it, and I have a little bit to back it up. On the MGM one, you can bet on a player to win a major. Of the four, you get any of the four.
Any of them.
Yeah, Matt Kuchar to win a major. Plus 15,000. So $25 pays out, to put 25 in, it pays out $3,775. Now, to give you a little reference here, so you don't, like, not that this is going to change anything, turned pro in 2000, best finish is second at the 2017 Open. So it's best finish in a major. He finished solo second in the 2017 major, Open Championship.
So he never won a major.
Never won a major. Best finishes, he's finished top 10 in all of them at some point, but his best finish is he lost to Jordan Spieth in 2017, I believe, by a stroke or two. Played in the final round with him all day. So
as an individual bet, you have to pan this. The implied odds are 0.7%, and frankly, it's higher than the 0% that it deserves. But this is the kind of thing where if you spread it out over enough of them, and $5 here, $5 there, it's such a payoff that if you do more of a spread, you can add up to maybe a 10% cumulative probability and build yourself a chance, right? Because that 0.7, it means eventually it's going to hit, right? But the idea is to stack that up enough and not, it's the same idea as buying a lottery ticket as a group, right? And buying 20 lottery tickets instead of just the one. If you're just betting on this one, no, God, no, you don't bet on the guy who's never done it before and hasn't shown that he can do it. But if you've got a free dollar credit left, hey, who cares? That's great payout.
Absolutely. All right, and then since we're just about up against the wall, last one. I'm just going to combine everything together and let you. You can analyze them as you want, but I'm going to let you pick the one. You have to bet on. You have to bet on one of these.
Okay.
You're forced to bet on one of these.
I love it.
Red Wings to win the Central plus $8,000. $25 gets you $2,000. Pistons to win the Central. They're actually not the worst of them. Cleveland is worse. $25,000. $25 gets you $6,275. Or this is the one I know he's not going to bet on. Lions to be NFC champs in the 21-22 season plus $3,500 pays out $900. $25 to get $900.
Can I throw one more? Can I throw him a safety line with another?
Throw a curveball in there for us, Jay.
Please. Super Bowl. Either team to be shut out during the Super Bowl plus 5,000.
Oh. Plus 5,000?
I don't think you made that any easier for him, to be honest.
The safety line was greased up and I threw it in the wrong direction.
Yeah, you're taking teams that are like both offensive juggernauts.
Wait, so just so I'm sure, the Lions odd, that line was 3,500? 3,500.
According to this, it's 3,500. Okay. I don't get how that's possible, but...
So they think it's more likely that the Lions win the Super Bowl next year.
NFC champs.
Either way.
So it's this, which I think is insane. I mean, I guess not that far insane. San Francisco is plus 700 to be NFC champs. Lions are plus 3,500. So yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Oh.
So you got to bet on one. You can parfait the rest. You get a nice big dessert. Got to parlay on one.
Oh my God, I hate all of it.
<you.
laughs> So the answer is none of it. Go buy yourself some dessert. However, if I have to put down 25, I start by looking at what's the biggest payoff, and it's the Pistons, and I realize they probably have the worst chances on it because basketball is so – it's one of the most stable sports as the best team wins more often. That's how we get the Warriors winning 72 games.
Yep.
So I guess I'll go with the Red Wings just because of the uncertainty of a shortened season and the possibility that a goalie gets hot and really takes off. Maybe later in the year some of the prospects come over. I don't know. They're all bad bets.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the highest payout that has a slightly non-zero chance of happening.
All right, Jay, you got to pick one. Which one are you doing?
Oh, God, none of them. I'm very much smarter than that.
No, that's not
you got to pick one.
Give me my shutout.
Okay.
Maybe Tom Brady throws 30 picks.
I mean, yeah, honestly, if I had my choice, I would say, screw that. I'll just throw an extra 25 on Kuchar winning a major. But since I got to pick one, I am going to go. It's a coaching change. It's a new day. It's not going to happen. None of these are going to happen. Give me the Lions. Give me the Lions to win the NFC. It's not going to happen, but none of these are going to happen. So might as well take the one I'll enjoy watching the most. Lions to win the NFC would be my pick. Russ, I got to tell you, man, you can be my accountant any day of the week because – you just saved me from spending about $300 on bets that I never should even be looking at.
Well, my one value with all this is I am an unbelievable miser. I'd be useful for gamblers. I'd be useful for GMs because I just go, hey, no, don't spend your money. Just hang on to it. And we'll probably come out ahead doing that way.
Just say it the way it really is. You're Jonah Hill from Moneyball.
A little bit.
That's all it is.
A little bit. I just want someone to snap and point at me and I can yell numbers at them.
I will snap and point at you all you want. My thanks to the stat man, the accountant, the guy that if we ever start making money on this is going to be making sure that Jay and I don't spend it. Russ Ivanek.
So I get to, you did the snap, I'll throw the number at you. 7.9% of the time, a Super Bowl has ended a quarter with a zero and a zero on either side. Not even both shut out, just scores end as a zero. It ain't going
to
happen.
He's not betting on it. He's not betting. And if you would like to send money to Justin, because we know he's financially hurting, that could be sent to at Armchair Sports Talk. We will set up a GoFundMe to, we want to say get him help, but really we're just going to help him with the habit. My thanks to Sergeant Salty, Justin Marcus.
Did you also think when Russ said he's going to throw out the number, he was going to say 1-800 gambler?
Like, for a minute, I was waiting for that.
Hey, let me. Speaking of, on the other side of that, Russ, if that hits, I'm giving you the money. Tom Brady better passer rating than Mahomes. That was your bet. You didn't know you were gambling today. It's my money, but you're fucking gambling. And if you win, you get the money. So you are gambling by proxy.
I love it. And I want to, I'd like to say I'm the sane one and all this, but I'm talking about betting $25 on a guy who's been on the, in the PGA Tour for 20 years and hasn't won a major yet. So not that much saner, but I can say that is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.